प्रभवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 24 टेक्स्ट नंबर 2। आसी ज्ञानम अथोऽर्थ एकम् एवाविकल्पितम् यदा विवेक निपुणा आदौ कृतयुगे युगे आसी ज्ञानम अथोऽर्थ एकमेवा विकल्पितम् यदा विवेक निपुणा आदौ कृतयुगे युगे आसी ज्ञानम अथोऽर्थ एकमेवा विकल्पितम् यदा विवेक निपुणा आदौ कृतयुगे युगे। आसीत् देयर एग्जिस्टेड ज्ञानम द सीयर अथ उ दस अर्थ द सीन एकम वन एव सिंपली अविकल्पितम अनडिफरेंशिएटेड यदा वेन विवेका indiscrimination nipunaha persons who were expert adau in the beginning krita yuge in the age of purity ayuge and before that during the time of annihilation. Translation and purport by the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Originally, during the Krita Yuga, when all men were very expert in spiritual discrimination, and also previous to that, during the period of annihilation, the seer existed alone, non-different from the seen object. Purport. Krita Yuga is the first age also known as Satya Yuga, in which knowledge, being perfect, is not different from its object. In modern society, knowledge is highly speculative and constantly changing. There is often a vast difference between people's theoretical ideas and actual reality. In Satya Yuga, however, people are Viveka Nipuna, or expert in intelligent discrimination, and thus there is no difference between their vision and reality. In Satya Yuga, the population in general is self-realized. Seeing everything as the potency of the Supreme Lord, they do not artificially create duality between themselves and other living entities. This is a further aspect of the oneness of Satya Yuga. At the time of annihilation, everything merges to rest within the Lord. And at that time also, there is no difference between the Lord, who becomes the only seer, and the objects of knowledge, which are contained within the Lord. The liberated living entities in the eternal spiritual world are never subject to such merging, but remain forever undisturbed in their spiritual forms. Because they are voluntarily one with the Lord in love, their abode is never annihilated. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamhiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajataham Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padahan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare It was the American author Mark Twain who said that if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. But if you tell a lie, then in order to be consistent, you'll have to remember what lie you have spoken and consistently speak that lie. And many a times we have to speak many more lies to cover up the first lie. I remember many years ago I was visiting my parents. They live close to Udupi, around 16 kilometers from Udupi, a village. And to give a background, my parents always have the opinion that I'm a little bit spaced out, which is a fact also. So, and they feel that, you know, this person has joined the ashram, he's alone. So what will happen of him in the future because he's so spaced out. So I was staying there and I typically go there for 2 or 3 days. And the day when I was supposed to return, the train was in the afternoon. In the morning, while I was chanting my japa, suddenly I remembered that I was not carrying my identity card, which is required for the train journey. Otherwise, the ticket is considered invalid. Because during the onward journey, somebody else was with me, so his identity card could be shown. But in the return journey, I was alone. Now, there was no possibility of catching that train. So immediately I called up the temple and a friend of mine, I just told him that because there are buses that go from Bombay, from Sion to Udupi every day, to Mangalore actually. And if he could send the I-card through the bus driver, then he could drop it at Udupi while going to Mangalore, I thought. And he promptly, you know, he went to Sion, he gave the I-card to a driver, and the driver left and he called me and said that the I-card is going to reach you by tomorrow, and by 9 or 10 o'clock he will reach Udupi. And my train was around 2:30 in the afternoon, so I felt it was pretty good. So catching today's train is ruled out, let's book for tomorrow's train, I thought. And I told my sister that please see if tickets are available for tomorrow. She found tickets were available and she booked the ticket for the next day also. But then, what to tell parents? If I tell, I don't have my I card, then they'll be like, my father would be furious. You don't even know how to take care of an I card. How will you take care of your life? So I told my sister, don't tell anybody. And I went to my parents and told that I just feel like staying one more day with you. And they became very happy. Wow, what a noble son. So I stayed for the whole day. So that was the first lie that I spoke to cover up the truth that I was spaced out. Now, next day, generally what I do is I catch the train from a station which is very close to my home. But this is not possible because I have to go to Udupi all the way, 16 kilometers away, to first collect my I-card and then board the train. So I said, I'll catch the train from Udupi tomorrow. They said, why you want to catch the train from Udupi? The station is so close. I said, I want to take darshan of Udupi Shri Krishna and spend time at the temple before I board the train. They felt very happy. Sunny is making advancement in devotional service. So the next day, early morning, I left for Udupi. So the point is, to cover up the first lie, I had to speak one more lie. So next day, I woke up in the morning. Early morning, I left for Udupi. And the I card was supposed to be deposited at the depot at Udupi before the bus went ahead to Mangalore. So I went and asked him, you know, this I card which was sent from Udupi, from Bombay. He said, no I card here. And then I couldn't just let it go. So I did some investigation and it turned out that the driver forgot to give the I card. I went ahead to Mangalore, and because they had an overnight journey, both the driver and the conductor, they locked the bus with the I card inside it, and both of them had gone to sleep. And those few hours, I was so much in stress, so much of anxiety. Because when you tell a lie, and then to cover up that lie, you speak one more lie. And many times one more lie. Then what happens? The amount of stress and anxiety that you face goes on increasing. That is one thing. And another thing that happens is, the more we speak a lie, the more it becomes difficult to come back to the truth. Because you get more and more implicated. So I was thinking, what next lie to tell if I have to return home once again? To accept the truth and tell my father, Papa, I'm sorry to tell that your son is space lord, was unimaginable. How could I tell that? So these are the things that happen when we speak a lie, we cover it up with more lies. Life becomes so complicated, we become so stressed, so anxiety ridden. And then it becomes more and more difficult to accept the truth. And because it becomes more difficult to accept the truth, we speak more lies and get more implicated. We get into a vicious cycle of lie after lie. This is a story of a living entity in material existence, actually. Because in the material existence, in the entire material creation, it is running on one big lie. And what is that one big lie? That one big lie is, the living entities can actually be successful in becoming controllers, proprietors, and enjoyers. That is a big lie that permeates the entire material creation. Now one might say, how could the entire material creation be dependent on a big lie? It was Adolf Hitler who said that if you tell a big enough lie and tell it frequently enough, it will be believed. Now Hitler is telling it with deep realization, because he was one of the biggest liars in history. So indeed, because this big lie that living entity can be an independent controller, proprietor, and enjoyer has been going on in material existence for so long, everyone tends to believe it. Somebody will tell you, this home belongs to me. This car belongs to me. These people belong to me. Everything is a lie from the absolute perspective. It's only a matter of time before truth will be revealed. In the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila, he speaks a beautiful verse. Prabhavam Paurusham Prahu Kalam Eke Yato Bhayam Ahankara Vimudhasya Kartu Prakritim Iyushaha. The Prabhavam, the potency of the Supreme Lord, is exhibited through the time factor in this material existence. The time factor is constantly revealing the truth. Whatever we think belongs to us, in due course of time will be taken away from us. Whatever we think we are controlling, we are going to lose control in due course of time. So the power of time, which represents the power of the Supreme Lord, is constantly revealing the truth. But then, Ahankara Vimudhasya, the ego of a living entity, is trying to defend the lie. Time is trying to reveal the truth, and the ego is trying to defend the lie from within. And this causes what? Bhayam. Stress, anxiety and fear. You are trying to defend yourself against the powerful time factor. And eventually, when the lie is exposed, when you indeed lose those things which you thought was yours, what is the reaction of the living entity? To speak another lie. That this person caused this to happen. This was the person responsible to take away what I actually possessed. I was actually the controller, but this person interfered and took away my control. So to hide one lie, that I am the controller, proprietor and enjoyer, what the living entity does is take shelter of another lie. That these persons are responsible. All of that is also a lie, because nobody is responsible for our suffering. Everything is happening. Ultimately, the root cause of the suffering, as Avanti Brahman spoke in the previous chapter of the 11th canto, is our own mind, which is telling us a lie that we are the controllers, proprietors, and enjoyers of everything that exists. The mind, one's own mind, is itself responsible. And so, in the previous chapter, in the 23rd chapter, Avanti Brahman comes to this conclusion that actually it is the mind itself which is responsible for my suffering, because the mind is telling this lie and convincing the living entity of this lie that we are the controllers, proprietors and enjoyers of this world. So what is the truth? That has to be understood. If something is a lie, something else should be the truth. So what is the truth? So the Sankhya philosophy explains what the truth is. What is Sankhya philosophy all about? It's about analyzing the material elements into 24 elements and trying to understand what is the root cause of the creation. And in this particular verse it is explained that before the creation, everything was within the body of the Supreme Lord. Originally everything belongs to the Supreme Lord, and everything continues to belong to the Supreme Lord. That is the truth. And then Sankhya philosophy goes into the details of Purusha and Prakriti. Who is actually the Purusha? Who is actually the enjoyer of the resources of Prakriti, material nature? That again is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to understand the truth that actually Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the controller, proprietor and enjoyer of the entire material creation is the ultimate goal of the Sankhya philosophy. And then one has to come to the conclusion that the best course of action is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And unless a person is tired of material existence, one is not a suitable candidate to accept Sankhya philosophy. It's interesting. Just after the story of Avanti Brahman in the 11th canto, Krishna speaks of the Sankhya philosophy. Because Avanti Brahman is thoroughly convinced that this material existence is not a suitable place to live. It's a place of suffering. And similarly, if you see the 3rd canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when does Lord Kapila explain the Sankhya philosophy? When his mother Devahuti actually expresses her despair. She says, Nirvinna Nitaram Bhuman Asat Indriya Tarshanat Yena Sambhavya Manena Prapannanda Tamaprabho. Nirvinna Nitaram Bhuman. Oh my Supreme Lord, I am thoroughly disgusted with material existence. Asat Indriya Tarshanat. I am being tormented by my senses, chief of which is my own mind. Yena sambhavya manena prapannandattama pru, and because of the result of the trouble caused by my own mind, my own senses, I am pushed down into the dark abyss of ignorance. Please show me the way forward. And then Lord Kapila explains the Sankhya philosophy. And in that particular purport, Srila Prabhupada says, unless one becomes tired of material sense gratification, there is no opportunity to hear transcendental messages from a person like Kapila. Devuti expressed that she was tired. Now, as I was speaking, that Sankhya philosophy is all about understanding the truth. And in this particular verse, once again, it explains how people in Satya Yuga, they were so pure that they saw the truth as it is. In the purport, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada explains. In Satya Yuga, people are Viveka Nipuna or expert in intelligent discrimination. And thus there is no difference between their vision and reality. In Satya Yuga, the population is in general is self-realized. Seeing everything as a potency of the Supreme Lord, they do not artificially create duality between themselves and other living entities. This is a further aspect of the oneness of Satya Yuga. And people in Satya Yuga saw the creation for what it is, as the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, something to be utilized for the service of the Supreme Lord. So they saw Satya. So it is called Satya Yuga. They saw the truth as it is. Now, commenting on this particular verse, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he quotes, Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate. That truth, absolute truth, is revealed as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And the people of Satya Yuga saw everything as Brahman, as the energy of the Supreme Lord. They saw the truth as it is. But what about people of later Yugas who are not able to see the truth in its proper perspective? Who are seeing a lie, who are lying to themselves, considering the things of this world as something which they can control, which they can own and they can enjoy. What about them? For them, the detailed Sankhya philosophy is explained. Now, to accept the truth isn't so easy. Understanding the truth is one thing, but to accept it is a whole different thing. So from one perspective, the process of self-realization is extremely simple. Just understand the truth and accept it. It's like Srila Prabhupada. In one of the purports of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he makes a beautiful statement. He says, one can attain Krishna consciousness or divine life at once, within a second, or one may not attain such a state of life even after millions of births. It is only a matter of understanding and accepting the fact. But somebody who has been lying and then speaking more lies to cover up the previous lie, it's extremely difficult to all of a sudden accept the consequences of accepting the truth What will happen? You don't have the courage because you're so used to a life of, you know, lies that it becomes extremely difficult to accept the truth. And so we see the people of this world, and even after coming to the process of devotional service, the tendency is to continuing to try to prove ourselves. Trying to prove that in some way we are still the controllers. Some way we are still the proprietors. Some way we are still the enjoyers. Because there is so much of insecurity within. Of what will happen if we accept the truth all of a sudden. Because we are still used to the perks and benefits offered by Maya, which we get by following a life of falsity. A life where we are accepting the lie that we are the controllers, proprietors and enjoyers of everything. So we try to prove ourselves. Some way I am still the proprietor. Some way I am still the controller. In some way I am still the enjoyer. But the truth to be realized is that no matter how much we try to prove ourselves in this world, the proof will always fall short because of the powerful time factor. And more than that, who cares for our proof anyways in this world? We are trying to prove ourselves to be something great. But who cares for the proof? Because in the material world, everyone is busy trying to prove themselves. We are trying to prove ourselves to others, but people don't have the time and the patience to listen to our proof because they are busy trying to prove themselves. But what is a spiritual reality? What is spiritual life? Rather than trying to prove ourselves, we are trying to prove Krishna's greatness and trying to prove the greatness of the devotion of all the other devotees of the Lord. That is a spiritual world. When this becomes the attitude, what is the result? Everyone is trying to prove the greatness of everybody else. So there is not just one person who is trying to prove our greatness, but the entire spiritual creation who is trying to prove the greatness of our bhakti. In the material world, we are alone trying to prove ourselves. But in the spiritual world, the entire spiritual world, including Krishna, are trying to prove how sweet and great our devotional service is, how beautiful our bhakti is. So if only we can understand and comprehend the beauty of spiritual reality, it becomes immediately easy to accept the truth. We read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the atmosphere in the Vaikuntha planets? Paravatanya bhratasara sa chakravaka datyu aham sashukatittiri bharhinamya kolahalo viramate chiramatramuchyer brangadipe harikatam ivagayamane. The description of so many sweetly singing birds describing the glories of the Lord is given in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then it is described that a bumblebee, kolahalo viramate chiramatramuchyer, a bumblebee starts to sing the glories of the Supreme Personality of God. And as soon as the bumblebee starts humming the glories of the Lord, immediately all the sweetly singing birds become silent. Just to appreciate that sweet glorification of the bumblebee. They are not thinking that we sing so nicely, why should we give an opportunity for the bumblebee to sing? Because everyone is trying to prove everyone else's greatness rather than trying to prove their own greatness. This is the Vaikuntha atmosphere. Not just the devotees, but even Krishna is appreciating all the devotees in the spiritual world. In a room conversation in New York, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna hugs the cow. What does a cow know? He is a dumb animal. Is the cow as great as Arjuna? No. Yet, due to the cow's sincerity to come and lick Krishna's body, Krishna says, Oh yes, my dear cow, come, and I shall take care of you. And Krishna gives him some sweet nectar. So that is the spiritual world. Doesn't matter who one is. Krishna and all the devotees are busy proving the greatness of the devotion of every other devotee. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, in his book Servant of the Servant, he describes how he joined ISKCON at the San Francisco temple. And then, for a brief period, you know, Prabhupada, after giving him initiation, went to New York City. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to write letters to Srila Prabhupada. And one of the letters, he expressed appreciation for the devotional service of his senior god brothers. Now, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, Mukund Maharaj, Gurudaspu, Yamuna Mataji, Malati Mataji and Janaki Mataji. And then Prabhupada's reply came. And Prabhupada wrote in that letter, Your appreciation for the service of your god brothers is very much laudable. This is actually a devotee's business, that everyone should appreciate the value of other devotees. Nobody should criticize anyone, because everyone is engaged in the service of the Lord according to one's capacity. And the thing is, Krishna wants to see how much one is sincere in rendering him service. Materially, we may think that his service is greater than his. That is our material vision. Actually, on the spiritual platform, the service rendered by a calf to Krishna and service rendered by Radharani and her associates to Krishna, there is no difference. Krishna is so kind and liberal that everyone's service, when it is sincerely offered to Krishna, he accepts. The problem is, the living entity has stayed in the material existence for so long, and it's hard to believe that you can lead a nice life without trying to prove yourselves to be great. It's very difficult to understand the reality of the spiritual world, that neither Krishna nor the devotees of the spiritual world make any discrimination. Everyone's service is equally appreciated. So it becomes all the more easy to accept the truth. Again, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful verse which describes life in Vrindavan. Lord Brahma, when he sees Vrindavan in its true glory, what does he say? What does he see? Yatra naisarga durvaira sahasandra magadaya mitrani majitavasa drutarut tarshakadikam yatra naisarga durvaira. Even animals which are naturally inimical towards each other, Sahasandra Mrgadaya, they are living together in close friendship in the spiritual world. And that is what Lord Brahma saw. Mitraniva Ajitavasa, they are staying together as friends, Mitra, in Ajitavasa, in the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, In Vrindavan, everyone is happy. The calf is happy, the cat is happy, the dog is happy, the man is happy, everyone. Everyone wants to serve Krishna in a different capacity, and thus there is no envy. The inhabitants of Vrindavan think, Whatever is given by Krishna, let us divide it as prasad and eat. This mentality cannot appear all of a sudden, but it will gradually develop with Krishna consciousness. By sadhana, we can come to this platform. So unless we are convinced of this spiritual perfection, that how beautiful life in the Vaikuntha planets is, of how beautiful life in the spiritual world is, it is very difficult to come to the level of accepting the truth that actually I am not the controller, I am not the proprietor, and I am not the enjoyer. So Sankhya philosophy is a philosophy that introduces the living entity to the truth. But that's just half the story. Now, how to induce the living entity to actually accept the truth? And so it is very interesting that Lord Kapila, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he introduces the Sankhya philosophy in the very same chapter, he also gives us the method of how to come to grips with the truth that everything is indeed belonging to Krishna. How do we let go of our attachment to a life of lie, that we are the controllers, proprietors and enjoyers? What is the method to make that transition? And he says that prasangam ajaram pasham atmana kavayo vidu sa eva sadhushu kruto mokshadvaram apavratam. That attachment to matter is a cause of bondage. But once we become attached to the devotees of the Lord, then we slowly start understanding the spiritual reality, and then it becomes more and more easy to give away a life of lie. And Lord Kapila, he goes into great details of this particular point of we should become attached to the devotees of the Lord in order to actually be able to accept the truth of spirituality. And in a series of verses, he gives the symptoms of a devotee so that we can find a devotee and accept his shelter and make progress. He says, Titikshava karunika surada sarva dehina ajata shatrava shanta sadhava sadhu bhushana. He explains about the secondary characters of a devotee, that he is tolerant, he is merciful, he is friendly to all living entities. Ajata shatrava shanta, he is peaceful. Sadhava, he is abiding by the scriptures and exhibiting all the saintly characters. And then he speaks about the primary characteristic of a sadhu. Mai ananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dhridam matkrite tyakta karmanas tyakta swajana bhandava. The primary character of a devotee is that he is exclusively focusing his attention on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktim kurvanti ye dhridam. And for the sake of devotional service, he is ready to give up all other activities and is ready to cut off all other connections. And what are the activities of the devotees? Madashraya katha mrishta shranvanti kathayanti cha tapanti vidhastapa naitan madgatachetasa. They are always busily engaged and in hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord. And because they are so immersed in hearing the glories and chanting the glories of Krishna, that tapanti vividhasthapa, even though they might be in the middle of so much of misery and torment of material existence, naitan madgata chetasa, because they are totally absorbed in me, they are able to transcend all the sufferings of material existence. So these are the characteristics of my devotees. And then Lord Kapila says, satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti ratkarna rasayana kata tajyoshanada swapavarga vartmani shraddharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. When we come into the association of such sadhus and hear from them about Krishna and the truth of spiritual life, then what happens? We are immediately able to give up our attachment to material life. The lie that we have been speaking for so long, for lifetimes. Compulsive liars, the people of this material existence. We are able to give up that big lie that we are the controllers, proprietors and enjoyers, and slowly we'll be able to accept the truth. And as we are able to accept the truth, we make progress. Shraddha, Ratir, Bhaktir, Anukramishyati. We make rapid progress on the path of spirituality. What is Anartha Nivritti? Anartha Nivritti is a stage we are not able to give up our anarthas. We are not able to give up a life of lie. Because we are not yet convinced of the spiritual truth. So when we associate with devotees, we become convinced. And then we make progress. And that is the essence of Sankhya philosophy as Lord Kapila. So many a times Prabhupada says that Sankhya Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are the same. He makes it very clear. Because Sankhya Yoga might tell you what is the truth. But Bhakti Yoga will allow you to accept the truth. Because unless we are able to accept the truth, there is not much point in simply knowing the truth. So without Bhakti Yoga, Sankhya Yoga is actually incomplete. So Prabhupada says, Sankhya Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are all the same. So, thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.